Cool. I think it's working now. What's going on, man?
Not much. How about yourself?
Not much at all, dude. You know, still trapped in this lockdown, working from home. All the gyms are closed, so not much going on.
So are the numbers still really bad in Germany?
I don't think they're that bad. Like, they're still increasing in comparison to other places. I would say, like, not really comparable to the worst, but for the most part, I think they're doing a pretty good job of just trying to isolate everything, especially with the new variants and the UK being so close, and they've already found some of the variant here in Germany, so I think they're just trying to play it safe.
There's like this weird thing here now. I was hearing about yesterday where they're saying you're not even considered to be COVID positive unless you've had two positive tests and you're showing symptoms. Like, so yeah, like there's a lot of like weird reversals happening, and like, and so now all the conspiracy theories are out of, theorists are out of force that it's now because Trump's gone, and so now they want to put Biden over by loosening up the regulations now, and I don't know, it's all crazy nonsense, and I've just been trying to not focus on any of it.
Yeah, it's been a wild, I guess, 2 weeks. But on the bright 100%. Side of these two, we've had Fight Island back, which is awesome. I think every single fight card's been pretty exciting so far.
Absolutely. I loved – so as fun as the fights were last night, I think I liked the fight night on ABC last week more.
Yeah.
And because, like, you know, there you had three first-round knockouts, and, like, the two decisions were, like, really fun fights.
And underdog, like, a lot of underdogs coming up and beating the odds makers, I guess, in those fights. So it was a sick
card. Oh, definitely. Like, yeah, like we saw, like, Ponzinibbio get
knocked out. Like, you know, Joaquin Buckley knocked out.
Yeah, he got pretty exposed. But yeah, like, those were really good fights.
And yeah, I'm sure James Krause is smiling ear to ear with that knockout.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. And then the fights last night were really fun. I think, you know, for the most part, we saw, like, more, like, kind of uneventful decisions. Like, some of them were still, like, fun to watch. But, like, for instance, like, Brad Tavares' fight was, like, yeah, it was fine. But, like, nothing really exciting. Nobody really, I felt like, got hurt or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've only watched the highlights from these, like, since obviously I have to wake up so early to watch the fights. I kind of just stick to the main card. But I watched everything in the main card and then just the highlights on the undercard. But, yeah, last night's fights were good. I thought that the Amanda Ribas, like, Marina Rodriguez fight kind of was a sleeper. Marina looked sick, slick as fuck. Knocked her out twice. Yeah.
Agreed. I was hoping Ribas would take it. All right, but unfortunately that was not the case. But yeah, it was overall it was a good night. I was pumped for Michael Chandler. Like, he definitely delivered, because usually it seems like whenever somebody comes over with a lot of fanfare, they generally don't underperform in their debut.
Yeah,
like, I mean, the only one I can actually really think of that won right out the gate was Ben Askren, and that was like a weird controversial win.
Yeah,
but like, you look back to like Carlos Condit, Anthony Pettis, like all the Eddie Alvarez. I'm pretty sure they all lost their first fights in the UFC.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's based purely on that. Not even thinking about the fight, I was like, "Fuck, I think Dan Hooker's gonna win." It's like, that's how it always goes.
But not even that. I even just thought, like, skill set wise, that it was gonna be a really hard fight for Chandler, because I think, like, looking throughout his career, he's never fought anyone like as tall and rangy as Hooker. With that's just as good on the ground as Hooker can be, and like evasive, you know, like with that kind of footwork and just like that well round verse of strikes that he has, the knees, the elbows, the kicks. And I thought that, honestly, I thought Hooker was going to just, like, stay on the outside, piece him up, catch him with the knee at some point, or a really good combo, and then end the night. But Chandler definitely impressed me. I think that he did a great job working the body early, like throwing that straight right just to kind of gauge the distance. And then once he kind of felt like he could land that that three, bro, he was just fucking in it and slept him.
Absolutely. And I also agree with your assessment, because, like, really, like, because when you look at it, like, Michael Chandler is incredibly good.
Yeah.
You know, and people often sleep on Bellator because they don't, their divisions don't have the depth that the UFC has, but exactly. Their top guys are just as good as the ones in the UFC.
Yeah, 100%.
Like Lima versus Usman would be a really good fight. Izzy versus, I'm completely now blanking on his name. Musasi, would be a good fight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? It's like, and Chandler's no different. And so, but that said, as good as he is, he's not known for being hyper durable. And so I didn't know if he'd be able to withstand it. Like I pictured him having some success early, but then, you know, kind of withering eventually, you know, and just after taking those knees, those elbows and those rangy shots. And, but that said, he looked fucking awesome.
He looks slick. Yeah. Like, the announcers were saying like, Hooker was on like the balls of his feet super early, and Chandler was just pressuring him up against the fence, obviously to try to cut down that distance and that, I don't know, 5-inch reach advantage that Hooker had, and touching him up with that straight right. And then as soon as he saw the opening and just blasted him with that big left hand, I think it was, and just put him to bed. So I was surprised with the follow-up strikes. I thought that Hooker maybe would have popped up, but that's really testament to Chandler's power, how those short little right hands while he was on his knees, like trying to put Hooker out, was super impressive.
Oh, definitely. And those honestly too, like, looked vicious.
Yeah.
They're really short, but you could just see like how quickly Chandler pounced on him, just let him fly and all that. It was oof.
It was gritty. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see the way it goes. I still don't think that any of the performances we saw will just like have Khabib like come up out of his chair and unretire. Or maybe they will, because, I mean, he's got a win already over Dustin, and we saw how easy that fight was. And I just don't think that there's anything that Chandler can do to Khabib that would except landing a big punch, which is, like, almost every fight with Khabib. This is the only kryptonite that everyone says is, someone needs to land a big punch on him. Maybe he'll lose. So, and I don't know, Khabib's out-wrestled the wrestlers, and he's out-striking the strikers, and I think at that point, if he does come back, he can hit the 30, you know, mark and call it a day. But I personally don't see him coming back at all. But it was a great performance.
I agree. I will say, though, if there's anybody who isn't George St. Pierre,
who I could
picture Khabib coming out of retirement for, would be Chandler.
Yeah.
Because he at least is, you know, a huge prospect from another, you know, from another promotion. He now got a huge win over a credible guy, Dan Hooker.
Exactly.
And so maybe that's enticing. But, like, we knew that no matter what happened between, like, Dustin and Connor, he wasn't coming back for either of them. Because he just didn't care. He doesn't care. They and them, even if Connor came out of flatlined Dustin, it wouldn't mean anything.
Wouldn't have meant
and
anything.
And it wouldn't have meant anything to Khabib if that Dustin did the same to Connor.
Exactly.
And he's so,
both you know, in the same way, I think, maybe even the same round.
Exactly. But though it does seem to be, like, weird that Khabib is still listed as being the champion. You know, so, yeah. I mean, so that means he didn't really retire, so who knows what's going on behind the scenes with Dana White and whatever they're negotiating. It does sound like, from what I've heard on, like, a couple other shows, that they are looking at him versus GSP, but, like, the big stipulation that Dana has is that Khabib would have to vacate his belt if he did that, and so, like, you know, and I guess maybe, like, if I last heard, GSP was saying that he couldn't make 155,
yeah.
Like, he tried doing a test cut, and it didn't, you know, and it was too light for him, but maybe now he can, and they just don't want him to win the belt and then walk off in the sunset like he did at 185.
They want it to be just like a proper super fight, not like some for the belt, just maybe catch weight 160 or something, 165, and these guys fight and just call it a day. I mean, two legends fighting against each other, I'd be game. Whether it's 155, 165, or 170, I would watch that fight for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if nothing else, just as like a good legacy for both of them. Because that would be, like, exactly what I think Khabib needs to, like, solidify himself as being the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would also further solidify GSP's claim to that, too. So, I mean, obviously, like, that's such a symbolic and subjective title. that really doesn't mean anything because everybody values different things. Like for me personally, I view GSP as being the best to ever do it.
Absolutely.
He never pissed hot, as was the most dominant champion ever at 170, came off the couch after a few years to then take the belt from Michael Bisping at 185. And that's also too, like, the one thing that I think Khabib's lacking is he never had the success in another weight class.
Yeah.
And then left a little early at 155 because he only had a couple title positions, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. But I think overall, like, if you look at the depth of 155 and all the people that he's already beaten, I just think that in his mind, there's not a lot of intriguing matchups for him. Like Oliveira at some point, I don't think the most intriguing matchup for Khabib. I think he's fought these types of guys his entire career. Like Poirier, like we mentioned before, already beat him. Chandler is just like another version of Gaethje, essentially, right? Like a power puncher with really good wrestling. Yeah. Like, what else can you throw? What else can you throw at Khabib? So I think the only thing that makes sense, like you said, would be like this super fight against GSP. I was actually surprised that the Dustin Poirier McGregor fight wasn't for like an interim belt or something, because then you could say Khabib vacates, and then you just promote the interim champ to actual champ, and then whoever wins between, I don't know, maybe they match him up with Chandler, maybe Oliveira fights Chandler. Like, this would make more sense to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was actually what I thought was strangest about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Was that, because I fully expected us to hear that Poirier versus McGregor was for the title, since Khabib was vacated. Because obviously, if they can put a belt around Conor McGregor, that's the best case scenario for the UFC.
Yeah.
And, and so the fact that didn't happen means that there has to be like very real negotiations happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, 100%.
For Dana to not insist on it. It is really interesting to see what happens, what will happen. I mean, my guess is if Khabib doesn't come back and he does vacate, maybe they'll do like Poirier versus Chandler for the title or something. Because at this point, now Poirier has two really good wins over Dan Hooker and Conor McGregor, which is better than anybody else could claim. And you have Charles Oliveira, who's doing very well right now. Obviously, he got the huge win over Tony Ferguson and stuff too. But I think he needs probably one more win too.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was his big jump in his big elevation fighter quality, essentially, opponent quality. Like, he had fought Kevin Lee, but Kevin Lee was win-lose. And I think that beating a guy like Tony was like the real big jump in quality for Charles. So he obviously doesn't – he needs one or two more wins, in my opinion, to get that title fight.
I agree, especially too, since the Tony fight came on the heels of him losing to Gaethje. Honestly, it kind of looks like Tony might be shot now, which kind of then diminishes – Oliveira's win over him. Like, if Tony loses his next fight, then it'll be clear that Tony's like just on a huge decline and needs to do something radically different to change it.
Yeah.
But so that in itself diminishes the win. The only thing that will sort of reverse that is if Tony gets another fight soon that he ends up winning in impressive fashion.
100%.
So I definitely think Oliveira needs a couple more good wins to really like make anybody excited about him fighting for a title.
Yeah.
It's at least I haven't seen anything on like the numbers that the show last night did, but I'm going to assume they got a bunch of buys.
Yep.
And so with that being said, I'm sure you could get a lot of excitement for a Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier fight since so many people tuned in and watched them both rack up impressive wins. Because Dustin really impressed me last night.
Yeah, he looked great.
It was funny because, on, an emotional level, I'd been saying, all week that, everybody's counting out Dustin so much that now I feel like he's going to win.
Yeah.
But I had been thinking, too, Dustin's so much more durable at 155, and Conor doesn't seem to quite have the pop at 155 that he did at 145 or at 170.
Yeah.
And, 155 seems to be the sweet spot for him to hit hard, but not super hard.
Yeah.
and and the guys are just big enough to take it. And I was thinking that Dustin could, if he maybe in the first round or two ran away, like just like made Connor chase him, or even more importantly, if he would just use those first two rounds to grapple,
yeah,
you know, clinch, be heavy on him, make him carry his weight, get him tired. And then, so I knew that Connor was in for a long night the moment Dustin came out and shot for a takedown.
Yeah. I was still really, I was really surprised by, like you said, the durability. I was also really impressed by how quick Connor was and how snappy he was with the counters, because he did land some big shots. And like you mentioned, obviously the durability issues when you cut all this weight, it's not an issue for Dustin anymore. So I was really shocked and surprised to see him kind of take those punches and just kind of roll with it. You could see he was getting stunned and he was kind of wobbling a little bit off of some of those shots, but he was a little more grounded, and his mental, I think, was a little more in this fight than obviously a fight 6 years ago. But 6 years worth of MMA growth, it's like you have to be another fighter at that point, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's why, too. And I also, part of me wonders if Connor can still be Connor while being like a humble adult. You know what I mean? Because just like seeing the differences in like his approach to like this fight and their first fight, where Connor just like had that swagger to him, was like nothing but like confidence and all that, you know, and then it really showed. Whereas here, you know, he was a little more like smart, methodical, and was very understated in a lot of his like promotion and stuff, which is very un-Connor like. And I get that he's had like some terrible PR over the past couple of years by just being generally shitty. But I don't know. I wonder if can Connor still be Connor without being Connor, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, sure. I guess the mind games is a big thing, and it's a big tribute as to like what he was doing early on in his career. But I genuinely do think he has the skill set, trash talk aside, to go in there and win fights against the best of the best at 155. And I honestly think that if these guys fought 10 times, that it wouldn't be it would be like 6-5 McGregor, or if they fought 11 times, 6-5 Poirier. It'd be really close. You know, I wouldn't see a landslide coming out of either two of these guys. But I think that at the moment, with Khabib out of the picture, these are the two best lightweights in the division right now. And they could fight every Saturday on a main card. And I think every Saturday the belt would change hands.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I think it'll be interesting to see how quickly we hear about a trilogy fight between them. You know, because, like, will Connor insist on a rubber match quick? I saw he posted on Instagram earlier, you know, already, you know, calling for a blockbuster trilogy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I probably will pick Connor in the third one, because he did show when he rematched Nate that he'll 100% do his homework and be smart about it. Because, like, because whenever you have rematches, I feel like the burden is always on the person who lost the first one to change. And they're usually the only ones who do. You know, because the person who won, why would they change anything? They won. They showed they were better. and Dustin just had the perfect game plan. You know, when they're on the outside, he was kicking away at Connor's calf, who, you know, since Connor was going for that, you know, almost like pure boxing style fighter. Like, Dustin came in more as a more as a complete mixed martial artist.
Yeah.
Whereas Connor just tried to kind of put him away with hands, barring a couple shoulder strikes and kind of throw away kicks.
Yeah.
But and it showed. And then when they got close, that's when Dustin would clinch rather than just hanging out in punching range. Like, he didn't really try to trade with Connor until he started kind of like getting into a rhythm.
Yeah.
And ultimately it turned out to be more than Connor could take.
Yeah, I also was impressed that Dustin even found the timing. I don't think there's been a single guy out there that's been striking toe-to-toe with McGregor that's found the timing of that left hand. And towards the end, after he had compromised that leg, you could see that he was, like, real shifty, moving in, like moving his head a lot, like moving out of the way out of that left hand. And Connor was really just, like, cocks to the wind, like throwing punches at air at that point. And I was super impressed, because I've never seen Connor just, like, whiffing punches like that at his opponent without even touching him at some point. And that's when I kind of felt the odds shifting. Like once you could see that that leg was compromised and he just like wasn't moving the same on it and sitting down as well on his punches and just missing all night long. He was just missing Poirier. The second that brawling altercation happened, calculated brawling, you can say, on Poirier's part, I was, I kind of just figured that the fight would have been over at that point.
Yeah, I mean, well, Conor's somebody who always, I feel like ever since he's gone up from 145, he's kind of been on borrowed time in his fights. Like, if he can't put you away, I feel like, you know, he gets close to, you know, his condition is kind of like a bowl. You know, he'll start off really strong, but then he'll get, you know, he'll lose steam until he, like, bottoms out, and then he kind of gets a second win late in the fight. Yeah. Like, which was illustrated perfectly in the second fight with Diaz, where he was garbage, it, like, towards the end of the second round, the third round, and the beginning of the fourth, but then he rallied towards the end of the fourth and then in the fifth.
Yeah, exactly. So first two rounds, he was, like, bad out of hell, and then rounds three and four is just dead.
Exactly. And so I knew when he didn't put Dustin away in the first round that it was going to be really tough for him, because I didn't think he could survive that bottoming out against Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so it'll be interesting to see what their next move is.
Yeah, I think he comes back. I think that maybe even he can fight Charles Oliveira. Like, I don't think that they're going to want to put him up against, like you said, he's looking for octagon time. And he, like you said, he really wholeheartedly believes that just like not being in the cage was like the biggest detriment to him losing this fight, because fighting 1 year apart from each other, I think the last fight was also around the same time. I think they fought 16th or it was like the 18th of January last year. On that.
Right before quarantine.
Yeah, so it's about a whole year in between fighting, where even Poirier is a little more active. You know, he was fighting at the Apex and obviously doing the rehab and training, and Conor obviously having kids left and right and all the scandals and running a business. And I think that still we're just not seeing a 100% dedicated McGregor to just his fight. Like, I don't think he'll ever admit it on camera or in an interview, but I think that there's still a lot of all outside things going on in terms of his business life and his career that's taking time away from him training and really getting his ass there in the gym to prepare to the best of his ability.
Yeah, I agree completely. And now the question then arises is, can Conor, like, can he fully devote himself to a fight? You know, will he? And if he can't, then should he still really be doing this? And if, or at least doing it at the level that he's trying to. Maybe he just tried to get, like, fun fights or something. But, like, if he, you know, he does have a huge business now that is rumored to be making as much money as fighting does in Proper 12. He has a couple kids, got the family, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, can he dial in and be that same guy who, you know, went on a tear initially?
I think he was close in this fight. I think he was close. Like, I think that he's on his way. And this is what I think is what he's saying when he's kind of mentioning that he just needs more octagon time. He just needs to be more consistent in between fights. I think he wants to see himself fighting two, three times a year so he can have that, you know, very minimal time in between camps. Like, he needs to keep himself active in that aspect.
I could see that, because he hasn't really let himself be a real fighter.
No,
not since he became a genuine celebrity.
Exactly.
You know, because that's when he started wanting, like, the boxing match with Floyd and jumping weight divisions and all that. Like, there was always like this extra baggage that he wanted with his fights, rather than just treating himself as another prospect.
Exactly.
Fighting, you know, other prospects of the division, which it'll be weird seeing him do that again. You know, unless he gets the immediate trilogy fight with Dustin, that's what's going to happen, is he's going to then, you know, it'll be him against like a Dan Hooker or something like that. And, you know, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens with him and what their plan is. Cause I know he also demands such a price tag where they're not going to put him mid card. You know what I mean?
He made $5 million bucks off this fight just to walk in and lose, you know. And yeah. I mean, Poirier made $1 million. So obviously, when you're fighting Connor, like you said, it's the other guys across the octagon are also demanding a big paycheck.
Yep.
Because they know how much money
they
he
know
generates.
How much money he can commit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Crazy.
Exactly. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
What were you saying? So it will just be interesting to see what they do, because it's, you know, they run into that issue with people where, like, cause you also, too, can't put, like, the number 10 guy in there with Conn. No. And now he probably is ranked, like, you know, I don't know if he'll even be in the top five anymore, because he was number 4 going into the.
I think he still stays top 5. I mean, if you think about it realistically, Hooker was at 6, right? So maybe Chandler goes to 5, Connor stays at 4, and Hooker stays at 6.
Seems that's all we've got for you guys today. Thanks so much for tuning in, and come join us next week on the next episode of the 10-Year Blue Belt Podcast. Cheers, guys. Bye.